mailing. Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
My mate Simon Lusk is probably one of those most in tune with American politics. He listens to podcasts on his way to his favorite fishing and hunting spots. Let's talk with Simon now and find out his views on what is going on in the US, who he follows and listens to, and more importantly, who he ignores. Good morning, Simon. Welcome to the Crunch at Breakfast. I hope I haven't interrupted you getting out to your favourite hunting spot.
No, Cam. I'm going hunting this afternoon. Happy to be on the radio with you.
I thought I'd get you on because, you know, one of your sayings I use all the time, it's harder to pick than a broken nose. And, you know, this last 2 weeks, we've watched the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. And, you know, a lot of people were sitting there saying, oh, he's won the election now. And you're going, not so much. Not sure on that. Now we've got Joe Biden quitting the race and the absolute tragedy of his exit. How are you reading this? What are you listening to? What are you reading about this? Basically, tell the listeners how you keep yourself informed as a political consultant about what's going on in the United States.
Well, the first thing is I follow the guys that have got a proven track record of winning campaigns. And that means Pod Save America, who are Obama's guys. And they were pretty scathing about Biden, and to the extent that Biden was getting stuck into them for not being supportive enough. But they're also realists. They're very liberal, but they know about winning. And then I follow Hacks on Tap, which is Mike Murphy and David Axelrod. And people may remember that Axelrod was one of the first to come out and say Biden can't win because he's too old. And Biden's team went absolutely nuts at Axelrod. But Axelrod was right. You know, from the midterms in 2022, the numbers were really, really tough on Biden. People just didn't think he was fit to be president. They didn't like his policies or what he'd done. They just thought he was too old. And, you know, that isn't something that you can ever recover. And he'd gone out with a watch me, and we did watch him. And within about the first 3 minutes of the debate, it was obvious that he was well past it and wasn't fit to be president. And that meant that he got rolled.
Well, the next week he appeared after the NATO conference, and I know you were watching it because we were chatting at the time, and I was watching it, and I thought what we were watching was cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, he just wasn't up to it, but he didn't realise it. And I take a somewhat different view to many people who thought the media were covering for him. I think the media were absolutely furious that they hadn't been given access to him. So they sort of heard that he wasn't that flash, but every time they said something, they'd get bashed by the Biden team. And when it turned out he was a doddering old git, they absolutely went spastic and really went after him. I mean, you and I were sharing screenshots of New York Times front pages that were just like, it was 3 weeks of unremitting brutality saying this guy's got to get out.
The Democrats have got a real problem now, though, don't they?
Look, I don't know that they've necessarily got a real problem. I think that anyone that is making bold predictions at the moment is just deluded. The only prediction that I think you can really make is that the election is likely to be very, very tight and come down to a few thousand votes in three or four states. I don't think that there's going to be a landslide against the Democrats now, and I don't see that the Republican vote is going to collapse either. But beyond that, you're very brave to make any predictions. I mean, so many guns in America, it only takes one nutcase with a gun to change it again.
What about the claims that you're seeing in some of the media in the United States that Kamala Harris is in the same position as Jacinda Ardern when, you know, Labor replaced Andrew Little as the leader and selected her, and then Ardern went on to win? Personally, I find that specious, because she's the incumbent. And whereas Bill English was on the way out. And so it doesn't resonate for me as an excuse. What do you think?
I think it's bullshit. I mean, they're just deluded. Jacinda was personally very, very popular, running a campaign where she didn't need to win a plurality. She needed to win the coalition negotiations, which she did. A very different matter than a head-to-head race with an electoral college. And, you know, Jacinda had very high net favourables. Kamala Harris's net favourables are sort of minus 15 or something. So she's not popular like Jacinda was in 2017. What she does have is a huge number of people that want to beat Trump who are throwing vast amounts of money at her. I mean, I think she got $81 million in the first 24 hours. And that's before they really turn the taps on. It'll be a multi-billion dollar campaign.
Simon, Nate Silver has a reputation as getting things right, although I'm not sure it's 100% now. Certainly made a big name for himself. He subsequently left 538 and gone out on his own. He runs an election model, but 538's also running an election model. Which one are you following, or are you looking at both of them or others?
Look, I am not looking at Elliot Morris's 538 model. It just looks ludicrous. And I think that it had Biden and Trump neck and neck, which just doesn't make any sense at all to anyone that's got any political insight. Silver's model is a work in progress and is pretty good, but I'm also watching The Economist. They've got a decent model, and The New York Times, The Tilt, is always worth following Nate Cohen. And it's like what Farrell always tells us about polling. You never look at one poll, you look at everyone's poll and you sort of net it all out. And I think that as long as it's not an absolute outlier like Morris's 538 one, which was saying Biden and Trump were neck and neck, you can look at the models and work it out for yourself. But they're all saying it's a pretty tight race and it's going to be very tight in the swing states.
When do you think we'll get an indication in the polls about the fallout of the last couple of weeks?
I don't know that. I always defer a polling question to our Pinko mate. He'd be able to give a better answer than I would.
Yeah. Those swing states are vitally important. That's what Morris Williamson was saying to me in 2020 and 2016. The number of votes that decided the election race was about 55,000 votes in about five states. Do you think that's going to be the same for this election?
You'd expect so. It's a polarized electorate. There is going to be vast amounts of money trying to expand the electorate, but no one's quite sure how that's going to work. And the polls are pretty tight at the moment. The polls are showing that Trump is ahead in most of the swing states, but that was against Biden, and there's still over 3 months before election day, so a lot could happen between now and then.
During the 2020 election, Kamala Harris got absolutely slaughtered in the Democrat leadership stakes by another candidate, just pointing out her appalling record as a prosecutor, a history of grandstanding, and just tore her apart, and she ended up with about 2 or 3% of the vote and dropped out. Is there a risk now that Democrats have wedded themselves to basically a flake candidate who giggles at the slightest drop of a hat and doesn't have any substance?
Yeah, but she's not got dementia, which is a big improvement, and America's pretty polarized. She was underwhelming. I thought she would do better in the 2020 primaries. She got 20,000 people along to her launch in Oakland, and she did some really good campaigning stuff with historically black college women's groups. And she just missed out somewhere. I think there was probably a degree of no one really trusted her and didn't think she was very authentic. But, yeah, at the moment she's likely to be a vessel for what the Democrats want, and what they want to do is beat Trump at all costs. So they'll probably overlook the fact she's not a great candidate and just get behind her.
But if I was Trump, I'd just bash her all day long on her performance on the border of the southern states.
Yeah, and I think that that's inevitably going to happen. And it'll be interesting to see whether she just comes out and says, well, I wasn't able to do what I really wanted to because Joe wouldn't let me. And see what Trump has to say there. And, you know, the dynamics of attacking a female opponent are not, it's not always bad, but I would want to be testing that really hard before I would go after her. I think it's inevitable that immigration is an issue, but how much they make it her problem. One of the things that I've been interested in is that there's a whole lot of left-wing ratbags going on about how she's going to be more pro-Gaza. I'm thinking, oh, I don't know about that. The Jewish lobby is wonderful, and unlike ours, they invest a lot of money, and I don't know that she's necessarily going to be more progressive on Israel, and I don't think there's very many votes in it. She might sort of say, oh, yeah, we've got to win Dearborn and Michigan, but I'm just not sure that that's actually going to happen.
Well, we've just seen the Jewish lobby in the United States take out a sitting, was it a senator or a congressman they took out? They ran a very robust campaign, and that person was actually one of the what they call the squad, the ultra left wing radical type congressman tipped out because of significant campaigning against him.
And Jewish groups put 15 million plus into beating him because he was soft on Israel, soft on Gaza, and didn't believe that rape and murder and terrorism needed to be dealt with as firmly as the Israelis are dealing with it.
I really struggle when I watch videos of Kamala Harris, and you know what I do when I analyze politicians. I turn the sound off and watch their facial expressions, looking for micro expressions. I then close my eyes and listen to them speak, and then I can see where they're lying and things like that. I'm not vibing Kamala Harris, but I'm not sure the electorate is as switched on as you or I. They would probably just vote for her because she's a woman.
Yeah, look, I think there are probably going to be a lot of people that are going to vote for her because she's not Donald Trump. And the polls that I'm going to be really interested in is the swing voters that are called double haters, who hated both Biden and Trump, and do they hate Harris as well? And that could be the determining factor in the election, is what happens to the double haters.
Yeah, they might actually hate her slightly less or more, depending on her performance. She's really going to be in the hot seat, though, and really be under the gun. And all of the videos of her with her trite little statements that she uses in almost every speech is just going to get replayed over and over and over again. And people are going to sit there and go, really? Like, seriously? Are you on this planet? Because that's the feeling I get, that she's not all there. I mean, yes, she hasn't got dementia, but she doesn't seem to have any sort of position on anything, and would probably be a poll-driven fruitcake.
Well, she could well be, but she just keeps coming out and saying, I'm not Trump, and that may be enough.
Mm. Well, it'll be interesting to see if that does come through. So who do you think is not worth actually listening to? We've already covered the 538 guys. You seem to be out to lunch.
Oh, no, that's the model. I still like the 538 podcast. Those guys are quite sensible. It's just the model is out of whack. I have a real prejudice wanting to listen to campaigners because they're just realistic. And it's very much like how you and I can get on with all the left-wing campaigners, and we may not be able to get on with even the right-wing politicians. But the backroom people were just, you know, they're realists. Like they're not going to say, "Oh, this is going to happen." If they don't believe it, they've got to believe that something's going to happen before they'll say it. So, yeah, I follow those guys closely. There's some good pollers. The Christian Soltis Anderson, and there's a number of others, Sarah Longwell. Anytime they speak on any of the podcasts I listen to, they're really good because it's like talking to Farrow. You know, he doesn't project his feelings on the polls. He just gives us the numbers.
Mm. I've been following for a while the Liberal Patriot on Substack, and you know I don't agree with them on politics, but they have some pretty good articles that middle of the road and an explanation that is easy to understand for most people. On the other side of that, you've got people like Simon Rosenberg, who is an absolute sycophant for anything Democrat. And just 3 days ago, he was pushing on about how Biden was going to win the election and everything like that. And now he's writing about how fantastic Kamala Harris is and it's all good, the campaign's on track. And I really struggle to believe a word he says because he's such a lock for the Democrats.
Yeah, I also love the Liberal Patriot. I think those guys are really good and they're... once again, they're background people. Now, the Hopium Chronicles, which you mentioned, he, in his defence, was about the only one that picked what happened in the midterms, and he believes that the fundamentals were going in favour of the Democrats, and that's why the Republicans didn't win in anywhere near as many seats as they thought they would. But yeah, he might as well have just put Biden's Pravda on his bloody website because that's what he was like Pravda. It just wasn't objective.
You don't have credibility when you're not objective.
No. And I think The Economist had a wonderful line where they said that Biden, the politician who prides himself on his common touch, seems to be asking us not to have any common sense. And, you know, that's just like, yeah, you know, we'd all looked at Biden and whether we liked him or not, it was just obvious he wasn't fit to be president.
He just looked like a curmudgeonly old man who had slowly but surely ebbed away.
Yeah. And unfortunate and obviously disappointing for him, but it's just the reality. And, you know, I've had many arguments with people about whether the media were covering for him and the left-wing podcasts, some of the other ones like The New Yorker and some of the New York Times ones have just been really scathing and they're sort of saying, well, the media have gone after Biden and Biden's team because we thought this was the case, but they wouldn't let us see Biden, so we couldn't know. And, you know, he missed the softball Super Bowl interview and, you know, just missed opportunities to get out and sell his vision. And it was because he couldn't be trusted to actually speak properly without a teleprompter and in an interview situation.
And even when he did use a teleprompter, you get all sorts of garbled nonsense coming out. But to be fair, so does Donald Trump. When he's
neither of them are great orators. But look, that the other person that there's two politicians in America that I think that anyone that really understands how politics works really admires, and that's Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, and both of them are just utterly ruthless at getting stuff done. And it was.
Yeah,
like Pelosi was the one that was really after Biden because she could see them losing Congress really badly. Flung in behind Harris and said, yeah, okay, well, it probably means Harris is going to win. If Pelosi's behind her, no one's going to run against Harris in the Democratic nominating process.
Well, when I saw that Pelosi had come out against Biden, I knew it was over for him because the only thing sharper than her claws is the knife that she's holding that she's about to shank you with.
Yeah, and apparently she told Joe that he could go the easy way, he could go the hard way, and that on Monday she'd lined up a whole lot of people, a whole lot of elected representatives to come out and say he's got to go. And that was one of the things that forced him out. And, you know, the other story that is widely reported is when he was saying, oh, I've got polling that shows me I can win, she demanded to talk to his campaign guy, Mike Dolan, and get him to explain the route to victory because she didn't believe there was one. And that turned out to be pretty much the truth.
Well, when old Nancy turns against you in the Democrat Party, you are finished, really. She's, you know, she's been there about as long as Joe Biden has, and she's a survivor. You know, I might not like her politics, but I can admire her tenacity in getting what she wants.
Yeah, and, you know, the same as said about Mitch McConnell. He's an absolute master of political process.
And how does he survive?
By being ruthless and by being an exceptionally good guy with numbers. And like Pelosi, being an exceptional fundraiser, which means that he can fund campaigns and build favours that way.
What amazes me with Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell is they're both distinctly unlikable people, and yet they get elected every time they come up for re-election. And without fail, there they are. Like, you know, the mythical lizard people, they seem to always be there in the thick of it.
Yeah, and it's a testimony to their professionalism and their raw talents. In the Democrats was worried about Biden, and no one seemed to be able to move him, but Pelosi did. And, you know, that is just, she's world class.
I'm looking at this race now, and I'm going back to your original statement that I've used for years, that it's harder to pick than a broken nose, although I'd have to say that the advantage is slightly in Trump's favour. What do you think?
Oh, I think that the polls and the models reflect that, but they reflect that as of Sunday, and you know, it's going to take probably a week for the first lot of polls to come through and really show what Harris is going to do against Trump, but I think you're right. Trump is slightly favoured at the moment, and the polling and the models all say that.
And I guess it'll firm up. That's the good thing about Nate Silver's models is he's constantly updating them.
Yeah, and the other good thing about Nate Silver's model is he says he's very direct about it. He says, look, you know, I'm saying someone's got a 2 in 3 chance. It means they've got a 1 in 3 chance of losing. And I think that that's likely to be that the model will be pretty close to even, and with someone slightly favoured, and he'll be saying, well, you know, if it's a 60% in favour of winning, they've still got 40% chance of losing, which is quite high, and they're not going to be definitive. It's definitely not like 2008 and 2012 where it was pretty obvious that Obama was going to win both times if you followed the models, and you followed the models. And was it Leighton Smith that you won lunch off because he didn't believe the models?
Yeah, Leighton Smith didn't believe the models, and he was, you know, backing what's his name from Utah?
Mitt Romney.
A forgettable candidate at the best of times, but there was no way that Mitt Romney was going to win. And I made that bet on air with Leighton Smith at News Talk ZB, and he lost, and we had a sumptuous lunch down at
Salem. Yeah, and I'm sure you went, yeah, you didn't really want Obama to win, but you were just a realist about it. And I think that's probably the thing to bear in mind is you just need to be realistic. It's, set aside your preferences and look at what's actually going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. In order to do what I do and what you do in this game of politics, it's not that you have to be right, but often we are. And the reason we are often right is because we just look at the data and remove the emotion from it. Whilst we might like, for example, Christopher Luxon to be, you know, a popular leader, he's just not. And there's no amount of soft-sell that's going to show that. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that some of his caucus colleagues will be out-polling him if somebody bothered to do those polls.
I think it's just inevitable. His net favourables have never been very good, and he's not a particularly likeable person. And, you know, we're just realistic about it. We don't necessarily care one way or another. It's just that's the reality. Luxon's net favourables aren't great.
Yeah, I mean, I literally don't care. I'm not a member of any political party. I'm a political commentator and a radio host and a journalist, and it shouldn't matter what I personally believe. I'm just going to call things as I see them and what the data shows me. And that's why, you know, I'm regularly on the phone to our Pinko mate, David Farah, so I can get the numbers to find out, you know, where I should be heading on my reckons rather than tilting at windmills, which a lot of political commentators seem to do.
Yeah, and they project their values on the electorate, which just is dumb. And they also project onto the electorate that the electorate actually care. And, you know, that's one thing to bear in mind in the US. If they have 50% turnout, it'll be about average. And, you know, that means half of Americans probably aren't going to vote. Now, some of them aren't going to vote because it's the electoral college and there's no point. Their state is so one-sided, it's that their vote isn't really going to matter. But most people aren't that engaged in politics. And it's one of the things that Obama's guys are constantly on about. You know, it's not the listening to political podcasts, that the people that sort of stick their head up near election time and start thinking about whether they're going to vote, perhaps as they walk into the ballot box. And, you know, that is what usually wins elections, is getting those swing voters who haven't made their mind up until the very last minute to vote in the favour of your candidate.
Well, it's as Morris Williamson said, it could come down to as few as 55,000 votes across various swing states. I mean, you look at California, that's a lock. The Democrats are going to win there. The Electoral College votes will go that way. You know, there's a lot of other states that are like that, but it's those swing states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and places like that, New Hampshire, that actually swing around, Georgia even, and those will be the ones that decide the election.
Yeah, I don't think New Hampshire's probably in play since Biden's gone. But the other ones, yeah, but Biden's route was really Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and he needed one other state. And, you know, he was trailing so badly in Nevada, and he wasn't going to win Georgia. Arizona, he wasn't going to win. Just not easy to see how we'd win those. And I think he was trailing in Michigan. And, you know, he needed to really, for him to win, he needed to win Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Yeah, so it's going to come down to those few swing states. Now, what? Give us your final thoughts, Simon, before we run out of time. What should we be looking for, and when will we get a sign about when that, you know, the election's going to fall one way or the other?
I'm not sure that we are going to get that. I think we may be wondering what's going to happen on election day. I think that there's still, you know, Harris has to be confirmed as the candidate, and then I'd expect we'd need a few weeks of polling to really know what her chances are. But I think that we can safely predict it's going to be closer than what it was when it was Biden. And I just tend to think anyone that is willing to make any prediction beyond that is probably not worth listening to. It's too hard to predict with so little data and in an electorate that is so close.
Well, that's right. The data's all changed now, and it's down to Kamala Harris, assuming that she gets the nomination from the Democratic convention. But I guess they're all locking in behind her now, so we'll see within a few weeks how the polls and how the models are shaping up, and then we'll get a better indication from then. But it's a completely open race again now.
Yeah, and, you know, a couple of weekends ago, we were very close to losing Donald Trump, and, you know, it's not impossible that that could happen. You'd hope it doesn't, but it may, and, you know, that would change the dynamics again. So you can't be 100% certain of anything at the moment.
No. All right, Simon, thank you very much for your time this morning, and we'll have you back on the show again, no doubt, in the rest of the year. So looking forward to hearing your reckons again.
Thanks, Ken.
No worries. All good. As you can hear, Simon's dialed right in to what is going on in US politics. That's why I listen and bounce ideas off him. Tell me what you think. Email inbox at realitycheck.radio or text to 2057.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.